This is Peter Francis, President of Clinical Laboratory Sales Training. This article is entitled 10 Common Mistakes Made by Lab Sales Representatives. It was published in Advance of Administrators of the Laboratory, March 2009. In today's laboratory business environment, selling lab services requires a considerable amount of training and practice to slay the competition. Those newly hired into this component of healthcare sales may not fully comprehend the degree of skills necessary to become master class representatives. People who have a laboratory background have a partial head start because they understand lab lingo, the clinical relevancy, transport supplies, methodologies, and so forth. But their ignorance typically lays in sales strategies and tactics to grow the business, in addition to maybe billing, compliance, and connectivity. On the other side, there are those who may come from a successful sales background within a different industry or a different component of healthcare, but are not familiar with laboratory test names, the clinical aspects, connectivity, and compliance. Even when a sales representative has a year or two under his belt, he may develop amateurish practices, preventing him from climbing higher on the success ladder. The law of first knowledge equates to the most powerful enemy of change. If there has been no or limited industry-related training or management feedback, the marketer may continue with mediocre habits that counteract adoption of more effective sales strategies and tactics. Without consistent coaching, salespeople typically assume the way they are doing something equals the best and the correct way and the only way. There are a number of mistakes salespeople make that are avoidable with proper guidance. It takes professional coaching and role-playing to escape from the status quo where natural bias remains. The following list of 10 items addresses some of the common areas many lab sales reps think they are doing properly, but in fact may need some refinement. Number 1, relationships. Every field person will affirm that having a good relationship with a prospect or a current customer equates to the sine qua non to winning and maintaining business. However, many inexperienced reps do not think relationship first and foremost. In fact, even long-term field people may tend to take relationships for granted, certainly a serious mistake. The topic of building relationships is too lengthy to discuss in this article, but suffice it to say, if a relationship does not advance, it may soon be retreating. People tend to buy something when they respect and value the salesperson. The proposing lab may not have service superiority over the incumbent competition. However, due to a large degree of respect for the marketing individual, the client may very well want to use that lab and overlook any potential service shortcomings. In essence, the sales rep simply outsells the competition. It takes time and patience to build respect with a client. A representative accomplishes this through a variety of actions. One is providing educational information to all appropriate staff members. Secondly, reacting quickly to problems and following through on their resolution. Third, learning what each staff employee treasures in life, for instance, their interests and hobbies, and then following through with unexpected acts of thoughtfulness. Fourth, introducing a member of upper management to the client. Fifth, reviewing the lab newsletter with the appropriate staff. Sixth, using the person's name during conversations. And seven, inviting the client to tour the lab and meet key internal staff employees. These are a few behaviors of top salespeople. They understand that creating a sense of "I care about you and our win-win business relationship" stands central to winning and maintaining the business. Interestingly, sales managers rarely discuss during meetings how to build positive relationships. It acts as one of those responsibilities managers just assume their sales reps accomplish in their day-to-day encounters. Salespeople need to remember where trust remains strong, selling pressure will always appear weak, and vice versa. One final point. Many representatives profess to have a wonderful rapport with Dr. So-and-so's office, either a current client or even a prospect. Frequently, however, that, quote, wonderful relationship equates to just one person. The master class marketers make it a point to develop trusted connections with all of the staff, including the providers. A simple rhetorical question remains for someone established in their territory. If my lab manager or pathologist called and spoke to anyone in the office of my customers and asked the name of their lab representative, would they immediately know my name without having to rummage for my business card? It comes down to, it's not who you know, it's who knows you. Secondly is pre-call planning. Right at the top of the list with building a valued relationship lives pre-call planning. Two areas need addressing in a well-formulated pre-call sales plan. The first equals having a legitimate reason for wanting to see the client. Because the rep requests someone to stop what they are doing in their busy day and take time out to interact, it makes it essential to have a valid point to discuss, something that holds the potential interest to the client. Simply checking in to see if they are still happy with a competitive lab prevails as a time waster for the staff, will likely be a valueless call, adds more company expense, and contributes towards deflating the salesperson's reputation. The best course relates to having a reason that might help their patients or educate staff members. If the field person calls ahead for an appointment or while at the receptionist window, providing a customer-centric purpose displays a professional approach, which in turn helps build credibility. The second part of a pre-call plan, if it's a true sales call, should be a commitment objective. The salesperson should get the client involved in doing something that shows a joint venture approach whereby the client helps the sales process. Either it can be during the call or after the representative has left. If the latter, there should be a time limitation placed on the action. Examples depend upon where the representative falls within the sales process. It may be suggesting a meeting with the next higher authority, a commitment to come for a lab tour, asking for a copy of the accepted insurances from the incumbent lab, asking for a trial with a few specimens, asking for a demonstration on how the customer retrieves test results on the computer, asking to see a particular supply the incumbent lab provides, and so forth. If no movement exists during the interaction, however subtle, the sale becomes a sustaining situation or a continuation. The client has not indicated interest, nor have they said, never come back. There remains an understanding the rep will return at another time. Unfortunately, to the detriment of the sales process, this continuation scenario plays out much of the time. Sales managers should be ever vigilant about a rep's pre-call plan. Too often it remains non-existent, or sometimes a marketing person creates a winging-it approach. Undeniably, it's a very poor strategy. The third point is coach. A number of inexperienced sales reps will fail to seek out an internal mentor or coach within each prospect. One must observe a definition here. This internal person should be someone who is, one, respected within the client's domain, two, has internal influence, and three, wants to see the sales rep win the account. A coach can be anyone, a physician, an office manager, a nurse, a billing clerk, medical assistant, phlebotomist, and so forth. It remains important to find out early in the sales process who holds the power and who has the most influence. Every successful sale, political factors notwithstanding, has an internal sponsor who helps the rep along in the sales process by supplying accurate information, validating the truthfulness of data the rep may have heard from someone else, and/or filling in information gaps. A marketer spins his wheels without a good internal mentor. If he or she cannot find and develop one, remember this. Unless there was a political or emotional reason for choosing a lab, There rests a high probability the incumbent representative cultivated a coach by, one, building a firm relationship through trust and credibility, and two, selling value and win-win. If they did not, and this is important, it leaves the door open for the competitor sales representative to work on this strategy. The fourth common mistake is proposals. Managers tend to think their representatives know how to prepare and present a proposal. In some cases, the lab will have a template and the salesperson fills in a few blanks. Ideally, a proposal summarizes the previous discussions with a customer. It should be as client-specific as possible. People can easily see through a canned bid presentation, and it can be a turnoff. Another important point, proposals should be the solidifying factor, not the sales pitch. It remains up to the marketing person to make him or herself the winner before presenting the proposal. The fifth item is apologizing for time. Some field people will apologize for taking someone's time when they initially meet. This shows they consider the client's time more valuable than their own. It also suggests that listening to the representative is far less important than other things the customer could be doing, of course, assuming a valid reason exists for the interaction. Apologizing belittles everything the rep says and establishes a subordinate atmosphere. If the client appears in a rush, it would be more appropriate to suggest a future appointment as opposed to apologizing. Number six, knowing the lab. Those marketing reps who do not come from a lab background have a significant educational component added to their job if they want to become a masterclass salesperson for their laboratory. Unfortunately, many field people fail to take the initiative to fully understand their own lab's capabilities. This has two detrimental aspects to it. One, it reduces credibility. And two, it impinges on building a robust strategy against the competition. The top-notch, well-rounded salesperson has an intimate knowledge of his or her lab's internal capabilities and a good grasp of the common referral tests and the formatting and generation of final reports. He or she has a good overview of the specimen transport supplies, especially microbiology. Selected methodologies are another important component to know. For example, Group B beta strep by culture, or is it by PCR? The old adage, knowledge is power, decodes into higher credibility, which ultimately leads down the yellow brick road to sales success. Number seven, competition. Equally as important as knowing your own lab, having a complete understanding of the competition prevails in establishing a good sales strategy. It is interesting to ask a salesperson what their competition offers that contrasts to their own lab. Frequently, a representative will have generic comments such as, "Oh, they have long hold times for their client services department," or "It's hard to reach the pathologist," or "I hear their couriers are unreliable," or "Their turnaround time isn't good," or "They lose a lot of specimens," or "They have a lot of billing problems." Now, these may very well be valid points, but they are soft when it comes to building a differentiation strategy, and they are barely scratching the surface. Having a profound knowledge of the competition persists as essential for creating a sales strategy because it provides the outline for strengths and weaknesses for both the rep's lab and the competition. The masterclass marketer aims to know more about his or her competition than the corresponding competitive representative. It means persistently digging and having a watchful eye for basic differences. Understanding the competition must be a meticulous activity. It's not a subliminal component of the job. It needs to be an unending pursuit of discovery by means of interrogating clients, perusing competitive marketing pieces, reviewing the website, and making personal observations such as patient service centers, courier pickup times, supplies, lab handbook, and so forth. It is staggering to observe the disparity between someone who has a sound knowledge of his competition versus someone who does not. The eighth point is talking features. Untrained representatives have a tendency to talk about features of the lab, such as, but we can offer multiple pickups. Our lab has 24/7 coverage. We can turn out a biopsy report within 24 hours, or we accept 47 different insurances. These attributes describe the service characteristics of the lab. In fact, they could easily have a negative impact if talked about too early in the sales process, because features are the breeding ground for objections. In addition to triggering objections, features are typically not something in which decision makers are interested. These people want to hear benefits. It stands incumbent for the sales rep to link features to benefits because benefits have a positive effect on a sales call, especially if it is something in which the client demonstrates interest. Number 9, test of special interest. A common error exists in not spending enough time learning about the background of tests they are promoting. Masterclass reps make it a point to study a little about the assays that are of interest to various specialists and become familiar with basic methodologies. This clinical relevancy component guides upselling activities and becomes the cornerstone of growing an established territory. Lab reps have various ways of finding out what tests are of interest to specialists. 1. Lab-generated test activity reports by client. 2. Vendors who sell reagents to the lab. 3. The lab's technical staff. And 4. Asking clients directly. The foundational components of credibility and respect rockets into thin air when a lab rep talks the talk. And finally, the 10th mistake is presentation. The following scenario prevails as a common mistake. The customer sits behind a desk and the marketing person sits across from the client. The field rep has a promotional piece, for example, about an available profile or test. He or she hands the literature across the desk to the client, who subsequently picks it up and begins to scan it while the representative begins to discuss the subject. The proper way to address the situation involves the field rep standing up, preferably next to the customer, and pointing out specific topics on the promotional piece with a pen. This does several things. It puts the marketing rep in a more of authoritative position because they're standing. It hones in on important points, and it allows the client to concentrate on those specific aspects. Using a third-party clinical paper acts as a stronger medium than using a company-supplied glossy handout. Discussing evidence-based medicine from a non-biased author will usually give a more compelling and effective message. To summarize, there are times when a salesperson knows intuitively a certain customer visit did not go as well as he would have liked, and it could have been due to one of the items mentioned in this article. Concentrating on these points will help augment the number of great sales calls, yielding a more productive and valued employee. Thank you for your time to listening to this article about 10 common mistakes made by sales reps. This is Peter Francis, President of Clinical Laboratory Sales Training.